Web Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to go some different directions on the show today. Jake Plummer will join us via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. There was a time where Jake Plummer was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And I don't know if you saw where Brock Osweiler has made the cover of Sports Illustrated. How many Arizona State, you guys may know this. I don't. I don't have time to look it up. Eric's planning more vacation days, so he doesn't have time to look it up. Jared Nielsen's playing video games, so he doesn't have time to look it up. Jared Cohen is, I don't know, he's out doing recruiting, so he doesn't have time to look it up. So I'm just here, okay? How many Arizona State athletes or athletes from the state of Arizona have been on the cover of Sports Illustrated? You know, there was a time where that was viewed as the preeminent spot. Remember there was like a newspaper that was called The National. The National lasted a few years. It was great writers. They were a little bit upset with their present employers, and they decided they were just going to go and do their own thing, and it lasted, I don't know, a couple of years, like when ESPN first started. Man, I sound old when I'm talking like that. And The National kind of went out of business, but they wanted to go, not kind of, they did. They wanted to take away some of Sports Illustrated's cachet. And then there was the Sporting News. There was a time where I was one of those kids where I would get my subscription to Sports Illustrated and my subscription to the Sporting News, and I would literally, in Pro Football Weekly, I would literally on Wednesdays and Thursdays go stand out at my mailbox. I was a country kid. And wait for the mailman to come driving up. I'm out there with shorts, t-shirt, middle of nowhere. I grew up on a 2.5-acre ranch with horses. I showed horses as a kid and had my own dirt basketball court. But sports was my getaway, right? So I get all these magazines. And when I get Sports Illustrated, I don't know about you guys, I still have my stacks of SIs from years ago. I don't know if they're worth anything now. Some of them are cut up, some are dinged up, but it was like this big deal. So Brock Osweiler makes the cover of Sports Illustrated this week, and Jake is was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, so I have to ask Jake about that. Jake will join us here in a little bit. Brad Edwards, one of the smartest guys in college football on the media side, ESPN College Football Insider and analyst. He's with College Game Day. He's been with us from time to time here during the season. It's a perfect day to have him on board because Saturday, if you've not been paying attention this week, on the college football front, on what's coming, the tsunami that's coming this weekend. This is going to be a great weekend. I'm going to be in Vegas Saturday and Sunday. I'm finding my way into the sports book Saturday and Sunday. And no, I'm not putting money on, you know, the Arizona State basketball game against, I think it's Texas A&M Saturday. No, I'm doing college football and the Cardinals game on Sunday morning. I'm going to have a good time. You know, I get to Vegas now and then, and this is one of those weekends. I've got some business stuff going on there, but I think on the college football front Saturday, what I am rooting for is North Carolina to beat Clemson, Florida to beat Alabama, which isn't going to happen because Florida is so beat up offensively, and I want to see Michigan State just destroy Iowa. I felt like Iowa all season long, and if you're a Hawkeye fan, you know, you're going to disagree with me. It's fine. Fine, you're going to get mad and send the notes and all. It's Brad at sports360az.com, by the way, if you want to send the angry notes. But I would really like to see Michigan State just crush Iowa, chew them up and spit them out. If that were to happen, and if Stanford beat USC in the Pac-12 title game, I could see Ohio State and Stanford getting into the Final Four. Total chaos. As it sits right now, if Clemson beats North Carolina and Alabama beats Florida and Oklahoma's already in because they've decided they don't need a conference championship game and the winner of the Iowa-Michigan State game gets in, that's it. That's it this year. It's pretty straightforward. What if Iowa-Michigan State is close and Stanford beats USC by 30? Is Stanford have the best roster? If you looked at the rosters of the teams, would Ohio State be the best roster that you'd want to take to war? If you're looking at the players top to bottom and you could choose one roster, guys, of the teams that you've seen this year, Eric would choose, you'd choose TCU, right? That's just how it would go.
They have two losses. They have two losses.
No, I'm talking about, just forget about losses and wins.
Just
if you could
roster?
Choose a roster. That's my question to
them. I would take Oklahoma's. I think they're the best offensively, and I think their defense, especially the back half of their defense, is really good.
You would not take Ohio State's?
Nope.
Is it because all the buildup of the quarterbacks? I mean, they've got skill guys all over the place.
I just don't know if Ohio State is the same Ohio State team as last year.
You wouldn't take Alabama's roster?
Alabama will be exposed in the playoffs.
Their
especially
quarterback is...
especially if they play Oklahoma, because Oklahoma has owned Alabama in recent bowl games.
Yeah. Well, their quarterback's not very good.
No, he doesn't have to be. I mean, you have a stud running back and really good defense, it's just I kind of look at Iowa and Alabama in the same breath. Very good defensively, run heavy offense, but if you get them against teams with a really mobile quarterback mm-hmm. and a lot of good skill players, and if Alabama falls behind 17-0,
I think they're done.
Am I confident that Lane Kiffin can manufacture enough points to get them back in the game? I don't think so. But that's just me. That's just me.
So Maryland hired a coach, and Miami hired a coach. South Carolina still hasn't hired a coach.
And Miami got lucky. I mean, that's just Mark Richt.
Mark Richt fell in their lap.
Yeah, Mark Richt just won 9 games, got blown out. Now he's going back to Miami, his alma mater.
But the
good hire.
But here's the thing. Rich Rod has been out recruiting his tail off, from my understanding. He was in Hawaii last week, on the Friday after Thanksgiving, trying to make sure that was in place. Rich was up in Washington. He's been in California. Rich Rod has been hammering it here. And we have said that he is on radars for other jobs. Now, earlier this week, Greg McElroy said he could show up at a place like Oklahoma State. Well, is there a job that Mike Gundy would jump to? No, now that SC is hired, okay, as I heard Mike Gundy's name at SC, I don't see where there's a job that's sitting out there that is screaming for Rich Rod now. South Carolina still hasn't made a hire. He's already sitting there. Are they trying to wait on one of these coaches that are in the Final Four or Final Six? I don't see the point in that.
I would think if South Carolina wanted Rich Rod, that would have been
already done
way down the street, if not completely finished.
Okay, Missouri. I haven't seen Missouri hire a coach yet. And I don't know if that's a good job, because you're in the SEC and you're going to get your head kicked in. You're not going to be able to convince a kid to leave from Louisiana or Alabama or Florida to go to Missouri, but I'd say Missouri. So
there are good high school players around there, but the good high school players usually end up going to bigger schools like Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, yeah.
End up at Ohio State, obviously, but Missouri's a fine job. I mean, it's okay. It's good. It's not great.
Did you see any Suns game last night?
I did.
Oh.
I did. Oh. And so, I was also watching ASU basketball.
That was a good game.
Big win for
Bobby. That was a good game. I was watching
big
both
win.
Games too. Yeah, I don't know, Eric. Help me out with something here. Do you think that when Lon Babby, who's still here, who's not supposed to be here, but he's still here, and Robert are sitting there, because I don't believe Ryan McDonough has been able to do what he's wanted to do yet here. I can't imagine them sitting there with the big screen saying, man, we have a roster that's ready to compete.
No.
God, I mean, it's not a good roster.
It's fine. But in
no, it's
the
not.
NBA,
it's 8, they're 8-11.
But it's okay. I mean, it's not.
It's okay.
It's not the worst. It's far from the best. It's just,
not even
it's
middle.
It's just okay. It's just an okay roster. Really good backcourt. Very little anything else.
Yeah, and then Jeff went nuts on the backcourt last night because the starters just decided it's time to jack up shots rather than pass the basketball, and their bench got him back in the game last night.
Yeah, it was a brutal loss. I mean, you're up late and
you were up 16.
You're up really late, though, really late, and then the game goes in overtime, and then they
well,
just
and some
fall
of their
apart.
Decisions down the stretch. PJ Tucker sets 2 illegal screens in overtime in a span of what? 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And of course, both times, you know, he just gives the, you know, what did I do? Like, that roster's not likable.
They could be 3-0 on this road trip really easily.
Yeah, but that's
instead,
the story with all bad teams or mediocre teams. They're just.
The Suns are going to be what they are. That's pretty much how it's
going
to be.
Do you want me to not talk about them?
No, we need to.
Arizona-centric. We are Arizona-centric, but it's the same story. Can I say, well, they didn't have Tyson Chandler and my guy Keith, the superstar of superstars, that tells Paul Coro that, yeah, I'm good. I'm sure you're good. You're in the first year of a 4-year, $32 million deal to do nothing and act and play like you're not happy being here.
And I don't
TJ
know
if- Warren, give me TJ Warren. I like him. He has upside. Put just give Markieff and a bag of rocks away to anybody. Ship him to the East so you only have to see him once a year, like you did with Marcus.
Who had two very good games against
the
Suns.
Who had two very good games
against
the Suns.
Somehow having a really good year. Double-double last night.
Yeah, I mean, is that an indication that he wasn't used right here as he had been saying? Or is it just he's not on a very good team and he's in a space? You know, Drummond can do his thing and go be dirty, and Marcus can just stand around and do what he needs to do. But gosh almighty, when I look at them play, it's hard because they don't play the game fundamentally sound at all. And that's not Jeff. Jeff is not a guy that is reckless or played reckless. And so, you know, you look at it and wonder what's going to happen with Jeff here. They're 8-11 just kind of circling the drain again. In the ASU game, you're right. That was a good win for them at Creighton. They're 5-2. They're interesting. They play hard. I don't think it's a really good roster, but that was the first game Creighton had lost at home in 75 times where they'd scored more than 70 points in a game.
It's crazy.
They're now 75 on it. That number was
it's such a crazy
if Creighton
stat.
Creighton scores 70 at home, they were 75-0. They scored 77 last night and lost for the first time to Arizona State. And
there is experience there though. I mean, ASU does return four of their five starters, but last night, they didn't play well early, and then they came out in the second half, and it was like a heavyweight fight.
Well,
that's going to be – I mean, if they're a bubble team, that could be – all these years, you've been pounding ASU for why aren't you playing one of the non-conference? Well, they went to Creighton, not a neutral site game,
correct.
In Omaha.
Correct.
And won.
Correct.
Like, the committee will take notice of that.
That's
as long
an
as
RPI
Creighton,
booster.
As long as Creighton doesn't go 4-14 like they did last year in the Big East, but.
But you know, the first game ASU had, they lost to a nobody, so that's going to hurt. But this was one of those games that can make up for that.
It can.
You know, on the other side, U of A plays at Gonzaga on Saturday. That's going to be a game that I've seen Gonzaga play twice now. They're really good. I don't think U of A is figuring it out yet, and Caleb Tarzewski's been there 8 years, it feels like, and
he's
now
hurt.
He's hurt.
A big injury.
And now he's hurt.
It's a big injury.
Yeah. All right. Jake Plummer's going to join us next via Skype. From his home in Boulder, Colorado. I think we have the Jake Sports Illustrated cover that we're going to put up over Jake. Because Brock Osweiler made Sports Illustrated's cover this week. Jake made it in the past. If you guys have other players in U of A and ASU and the college world that made the cover of Sports Illustrated, I remember the Desert Swarm cover with U of A football. But for Brock Osweiler to already be on the cover of SI after a couple of weeks, that's pretty amazing. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Jake Plummer joins us now via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. We're going to do quite a bit of NFL this week, and I actually want to start with Jake on you were a cover boy for Sports Illustrated, correct?
I made the cover. That's... Yes, it's one of my proudest moments was being on the cover as a kid reading SI. It's every kid's dream. So when that happened, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, anybody give you a hard time about it?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean that's just what goes along with it. But the comeback there is I guess you're not on the cover. So what can anybody else say if they're not on the cover?
Is it too early for Brock Osweiler to be on the cover? Because he is this week, and it's been a couple of games, and he's on the cover of SI.
Well, I think that it's a little bit, maybe a little early for him to be on there and that big of a publication. But I think it's the situation that we're in here in Denver with him not only being the backup that's come in and played well and gotten two wins, but the situation that's still looming is with Peyton and his foot, and will Peyton come back? And so everybody's eyes and ears are turned this direction, and he's getting a lot of focus, but he has played well. He has come in and led this team and looked really good, and they've gotten two wins with him at the helm. So for starters, he's off to a very good start.
Did you see Ben Roethlisberger's story over the weekend where he pulled himself, self-reported that he had a concussion, took himself out of a game?
Yeah, I see that. I think it's I've always said it should be up to the players, not some doctor that tells you if you should go in or out of the game. But you got to somehow have some sense about you and know what can happen if you do take a concussion and then the risk of going back out there.
New day and age, though, Jake, I would think, for concussions, because I would have to believe on one or so occasions you would have had to have self-reported yourself in your career. I think every quarterback gets knocked a little woozy at times, right?
Yeah, there were plenty of times, you know, but I wasn't ever out of it so much so that I couldn't think clearly, except maybe my rookie year when I handed the ball to Larry Sinners instead of the tailback, and that was a bad play on the goal line. I'd been dinged by LaVon Kirkland, but any player, any competitor, I don't think they're gonna say, "Hey, take me out," unless they know for sure they cannot perform and do their job. My whole thing to fix this whole problem is sign a waiver at the beginning of your career, and every year re-sign it. You either state, "Hey, I am okay with you taking me out of the game because of concussion. I'll follow the protocol. Therefore, I'll be, you know, involved in any lawsuits or anything that goes on." Or you sign and say, "Don't touch me. Don't tell me what to do. It's my body, my brain, and I will never sue the NFL." And that would solve a lot of these problems.
You have kids. Would you let them play football?
I mean, you know what, kids, you know, let them. The kids are going to do what they want to do or find mm-hmm. their interests in some way. I think my kids will be, you know, into sports. I watch football. My nephews, they play. So there's going to be a natural gravitational pull to playing sports. Will it be football? I'm not sure. The state of the game now, I worry, because my son's just as skinny, if not skinnier, than I was. And
that's impossible, by the way. That's impossible.
he's bony. So, but wiry, he's wiry and quick, and you know, that will serve him well if he does. But with kids training at such a young age and putting up weights and getting big when they're in the eighth, ninth grade, I worry if my son wants to play, because I didn't play against big, huge kids when I was in junior high. I mean, everybody was kind of, there were bigger guys, but they weren't trained warriors yet. So the way the game's going, I have concern, but it's still a fun game to watch. And until the fans stop watching, there's always going to be football.
Isn't it true, though, that the art of teaching proper tackling technique has been lost? Thus, kids are going out there and throwing their bodies around recklessly and not aware of what they're doing. Do you buy into that? Because I hear that quite a bit.
I have actually kind of opened up a discussion somewhat on a few of my podcasts about just some of those techniques, some of the coaching styles. You look at you know, what the Rams have done with some pretty dirty hits. There's plays every week that you see where you get safeties that come flying in. As a guy is going down, he's already being tackled by three or four guys. They come flying in to put that exclamation point on a tackle. Those are the plays that if the NFL really cares and wants to clean up, they need to eliminate those by penalizing them. And if it's a problem, you know, penalize and punish the defensive coordinators that are coaching this style. It just doesn't need to happen. And I think a lot of times you see those guys come in for the cleanup and they hit their own player. You know, they hit their own teammate on defense. So those are the ones that I think are should be eliminated from the game. And I would like to see some pros, a lot more of the pros, especially the safeties, use their arms and tackles and use their shoulder and tackle properly so that kids can see, hey, this is how you do it. You don't just come flying in there like a missile with your head down and try to blow somebody up. That's not how football should be played. You shouldn't try to hurt the guy you're playing. You should just try to get him down on the ground.
You mentioned the Rams. The Cardinals play at St. Louis this week. Carson Palmer against, as you well put, a very aggressive, sometimes dirty Rams defense. Were you aware of that coming into a game week, that this defense is a little over the top, a little sketch, a little off to the side, a little out of bounds?
Yeah, there's defenses that play real physical, and they're the ones that, you know, you got to go in there and match them, you know, might for might. You got to go in there and hit them just like they're hitting you. But when you're taking it over the top, you know, I mean, I look back to 3 weeks ago, that dirty hit on Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, that's just a guy being coached to, no matter what, we'll pay your fine, we'll take care of you. Mm. You know, hit the guy, hit him, and hit him later, whatever it takes. I just don't like that style. So, you know, hopefully the Cardinals can go in there and, you know, a team like that and a defense like that, what do? You just hit them back in the mouth clean and hope to get the edge. So hopefully the Cardinals can do that against a very stingy defense and a team that, if they had a quarterback that could get it done, I think would be a very dangerous team in the Rams.
Huge college football weekend. This is it. The Final Four appears to be set unless some upsets happen. But I'm just curious, and if you haven't seen enough football, just tell me this year on the college front, Is there a team whose roster you would take that is not maybe in the top four, top five, top six? Meaning I look at Ohio State's roster and say, they're just as good, if not better, than Clemson's roster at number one. Do you have one team?
Yeah, I would say Stanford. And I'm hoping, just because I'm a Pac-12 guy, I'm hoping that they can find their way somehow into that game. I mean, you look at USC also. USC has a very talented roster. They've started to gel late in the season, a dangerous team. So I think if Stanford was able to get a win over USC, that should help, hopefully with some upsets, propel them up into the top four. But we'll wait and see. Clemson is a very talented team, great coached very well. They deserve to be there at number one. Michigan State's tough. I don't know. There's a lot of good teams out there. It's too bad there's only four spots.
And before I let you go, disappointing Saturday for Arizona State. I think, Jake, if you're talking about biggest disappointments nationally, Auburn would have to be there and Arizona State would have to be there at the top of the list. If we're just talking about preseason hype, preseason buildup. That said, is going to a bowl game that big of a deal if it's even here in Phoenix to the Cactus Bowl in downtown?
Of course, it's always a big deal, and I think that to keep the streak alive, to let the seniors know that, hey, the season was a disappointment, but you stuck with it, you kept battling. You know, the Nick Kelly and Jordan Simone and DJ Foster, Berkovici, these guys, they deserve it. They deserve a chance to go play in a game that's a bowl game where they're treated well and they get some swag, and to try to win one to end their careers, to go out in style. You don't ever want to discount a game or a bowl game. Yeah, the season didn't go how it should have. They played in some really close games that if they switch those around, the record is different. But I think on some big stages and big moments, they just didn't step up. And that's a hard one to swallow. That's hard to look at for whatever reason. If it's, you know, losing Bo Graham, the signal whisperer, or whatever you want to call him. I mean, if that's the case, then hey, figure out how to play football without knowing what the other team's doing. Figure it out and get it done. But I think Berkovici, you got to tip your hat to him. Pac-12 student athlete of the year. I mean, what a great honor for him. He sets the bar real high for those kids to follow him. And you know, I'm really proud of the way he played and kept going. You know, it's a tough season, but hey, you have some setbacks here and there. It only make you stronger, hopefully.
Good talking with you. We'll chat next week. Thanks for the visit, Jake.
All right, Brad. You guys have a good one. Bye-bye.
Here now is Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, analyst for College Game Day, a repeat guest with us here on Brad Sismat's Football AZ. We're coming into Saturday, so let's just say, let's get all these scenarios out of the way, Brad, right off the top. Clemson loses to North Carolina. Clemson's out. North Carolina's in, or does Ohio State or Stanford get in? Let's go with that scenario first.
Yeah, you know, Brad, it would be very difficult to imagine Clemson getting in after losing to North Carolina, especially considering that they would have the same record at that point. There would be a head-to-head win by North Carolina over Clemson, and North Carolina would be the conference champion of the league that they both play in. Yet, at the same time, you can look at what Jeff Long, the committee chair, has said about North Carolina in recent weeks, and especially this past Tuesday night, where he just continued to harp on the fact that they have two wins over FCS teams, and they have a really bad loss to South Carolina. And let's keep in mind, Oklahoma has a really bad loss to Texas, but that never gets mentioned anymore. So there's something about South Carolina's profile, excuse me, about North Carolina's profile, that the committee really hates. And I think it's the two wins against the FCS teams. And I just have a hard time seeing them getting over that to the point of putting North Carolina in the playoff. Now, I don't think that it's necessarily unrealistic for a team to jump from 10 to 4 in the final week, given the way the committee operates. But I just think in this case, they don't want to put North Carolina in. Maybe the only chance the Tar Heels would have is if they just blow out Clemson, if they jump out to a big lead early and it's just never competitive, then maybe similar to what happened with Ohio State last year. I'm not saying it has to be 59-0, but the way that Ohio State went out and dominated against Wisconsin, you know, kind of put the committee in a place where it was going to be really difficult not to take them. Now, if they don't want to take North Carolina, I think Stanford is probably the pick if they win the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, then you could say, okay, well, Ohio State would be your fallback if you're opposed to the two FCS wins that North Carolina has. But that brings up an interesting question, which is, how could you justify taking Ohio State over Clemson? Neither one's a conference champ, and Clemson has a better body of work than Ohio State does. And so there is a tremendous conundrum there if in the event that North Carolina were to win, and especially if a North Carolina win is accompanied by a Stanford loss. And so, look, if you're a fan of chaos, that's really all you have left, because I think Oklahoma's in. I think whoever wins the Big Ten title is in. And it's really hard to see Florida upsetting Alabama, considering how bad Florida's offense is playing right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think the Clemson-North Carolina game to me seems to be the one of intrigue. If we're just talking eyeball test, if I said, hey, Brad Edwards, which roster do you want to go into a title game? If you're just using eyeball test, is it one of those four or is it Stanford or Ohio State?
Just the eye test?
Yeah.
For the roster, I would go with Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem: is that when you say roster, I'm not really putting any more emphasis on one player than another. The issue that Alabama is going to have, assuming they do get in the playoff, is I by my count, there are eight teams that I think are still alive to some degree to get into this playoff. Eight that have some sort of prayer going into this last day, and whichever four get in, if Alabama is one of the four, Alabama will have, I think, by far the worst quarterback of the four.
Hmm.
And that's the equalizer. You know, Jake Coker has, I think he's gotten better as the season's gone on, but he still misses a lot of open throws. I don't think he does a great job of reading defenses pre-snap. And so I can see Alabama losing because of poor quarterback play, even though against most teams in the country, they'll be better at almost every other position on the field. I think Oklahoma, eye test just the way they play as a team, is probably the best looking right now.
Mm.
I don't think they have the best talent overall on the roster. They have really good talent, but I don't think their talent is as good as Alabama or even Ohio State. And, you know, Ohio State, for all the future high draft picks they have on that team, outside of last week against Michigan, they just really haven't clicked. And even in that game, the passing game for Ohio State still didn't do a whole lot. And I've just got to think a good defensive team in the playoff would do, you know, kind of what Michigan State did to Ohio State. They'd keep them from running the ball, and they'd force them to throw it. And so I'm not sure that I would really like Ohio State to win the playoff either.
Before I let you go, the national view of coaching openings, Rich Rodriguez's name has been in a lot of places, at least out here. He hasn't surfaced yet. Do you think he's going to in the second wave? Do you see a potential landing spot? We'd heard South Carolina. We'd heard Georgia even before Rick was let go. Everybody was pointing towards Virginia Tech. Virginia's still sitting there. Any of these landing spots or potential landing spots make sense for Rich Rodriguez?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the two names or the two schools that I had heard his name associated with the most were Virginia Tech and South Carolina. Obviously, Virginia Tech has already hired their guy. And I heard someone yesterday on the Paul Feinbaum show, and for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with that show,
sure.
It's on the SEC network, and they cover the SEC, and they've got guys who are pretty dialed in to those schools, and they had on one of the beat reporters who covers South Carolina, and he was going through a list of candidates, and Rich Rod's name did not come up in about five names that were mentioned for that job. So I've got to think at this point he's further down their list, and it seems unlikely that he would be hired there. So unless there's another spot open, or maybe there's a spot that hasn't come open yet,
right.
That because the domino effect could open up, and that would be a possibility for him. But right now, based on everything I'm hearing, my guess would be that he'll still be in Tucson next year.
Appreciate your time as always, Brad. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Brad.
It's Brad Edwards with us from ESPN right there on the set. Appreciate his time. Tyrann Mathieu was named NFC Defensive Player of the Month today, which is interesting. We had Mike Jarecki and Kent Summers in studio yesterday on their podcast, and the two of them didn't feel as though that he's played as well as Patrick Peterson so far this season, and that Tyrann Mathieu's given up some big plays. But But nonetheless, that was today. There's a story I want to get to on the other side involving security. And we know what's happened in San Bernardino, the latest mass shooting. And it's going to impact you more and more as you go to sporting events. And there's already a story within our state of more security now because of, just the measures that are going on because of these mass shootings. And it's going to come into sports and impact you. I'll have that story for you next. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So there's part of me that last night, as I was watching the sports stuff, and it is stuff in the grand scheme of things, and I know you guys want distraction, and some of you just don't even want me to go down the path of what went on in San Bernardino yesterday, but it's my show. And there are things that I see in the world that disturb me and bother me. And obviously what's going on the shooting front with what happened yesterday in San Bernardino is something that is gnawed at me. And there's two schools of thought here. There is either pray for those in San Bernardino, or there's arm yourself because of people in San Bernardino. And there's no middle ground right now. And I don't know what it's going to take to get middle ground. I'm not going to go on a rant here throughout this show, but if I said we need to pray for those in San Bernardino, which I do believe in prayer, that's going to get some of you on the gun side to say, well, no, you need to arm yourself. And then I'm going to say to the people on the prayer side that, you know what, arming yourself is a Second Amendment. And so you look at both sides on that. I just know we need to figure something out. I remember 4 years ago, I met with a group of healthcare professionals. Along with doing Sports 360 AZ, I had a health site called Health to Fit. And the whole concept was, let's do things on a health front here in Arizona. And we let that go. But I remember sitting with some hospital executives, and they said, you're right, you have something here, because it was telling stories on the health front. They said, the problem that we have, Brad, is nobody wants to see a story coming up at 5, or the TV side doesn't want to do pieces on why is your aunt crazy, or mental health stories. Nobody wants to see mental health stories. They don't want to address it. And these people told me at the time, and I don't know if it's related to what went on yesterday in San Bernardino. I don't. But I know that we've had mass shootings, and we've had things happen because of mental health. And they said at the time, this was 4 years ago, the biggest issue our country is going to face in the health front is mental health illness, because nobody wants to deal with it. Nobody wants to talk about it. And there's people all around us that are struggling. Families are struggling with people on the mental health side. It's starting to seep over to sports of what has happened in recent months. The U of A is the latest example. Sports fans are going to go to U of A games now. They've released a statement that clear plastic bags are going to be the new mode of fans going to U of A athletic venues. They say because of recent international events, what went on in London, the U of A is also reducing the number of public entrances open at sporting events. They're going to step up security screenings of people going to sports facilities. This is not just a football thing. This is going to all start with basketball on December 9th, a home game at McHale Center against Fresno State. More than half of the entrances are going to be closed for the game. They're only going to have 5 ways to get into the arena now. They used to have 12. They've reduced it now down to 5. While there's no credible threat to the university, one major piece of our job is to stay vigilant, a statement from the U of A athletic website. Purses are not going to be allowed now, unless they're very tiny, no larger than a human hand. So you want to take your girlfriend, you want to take your wife, and she wants to bring her purse, and what woman doesn't? Sorry, you're going to have to leave it in the car. And those small little purses are going to be searched before you can enter the game to see U of A play. Any fans that carry a fanny pack or purse. Fanny packs, Eric, do you still have fanny packs from the 80s, 90s?
I do not, no. I know
I still have one. I'll throw it on occasionally just to get my 20-year-old daughters just to freak out, like, oh, my gosh, Dad has a fanny pack.
Don't ever wear that.
I'll wear
ever.
Tube socks up to my knees, you know, tight shorts, show bulges in the wrong places.
I don't need to know any of this.
Yeah, yeah, I got my fanny pack. Any items fans may normally carry inside a fanny pack or purse have got to be put into a clear plastic freezer bag, 12 by 12 by 6, that U of A will provide. So this is according to Jeremy Sharp. You and I know Jeremy.
Yep.
So Jeremy's taking the front on this, not Greg. Plastic freezer bags will be made available to fans at the U of A games December 9th to December 12th. Now, this is no slight towards U of A basketball, but a lot of people that go to U of A basketball are retirees. That's just how it is. It's a cauliflower crowd. And so they're going to be inconvenienced. And some of you will say, well, that means that these guys have won, the terrorists have won. Again, I don't know about the side of what happened yesterday in San Bernardino.
It's interesting that you brought this up, Brad, because last week when I was out for the TCU-Baylor game in a downpour, TCU is also doing the same thing the U of A is doing. Purses are not allowed.
Right.
I walked in. I was wearing a poncho just like everyone else, and no one searched me. My wife had to take – they had to show the little plastic bag, and they patted her down. But I basically was – like I had on a big, bulky poncho, and I just walked right in, and I'm thinking to myself – man, that was pretty easy.
Don't you find yourself doing that? I do too. Now.
Only just because, I don't want to say they're targeting women, but this is everything that you mentioned is geared towards purses and handbags and things like that. And guys can just, I mean, they didn't pat me down or anything, and I just thought
it's kind of different. Because a petite, like your wife is tiny, like I could step on her. She's so tiny. It is because that the view is they'll automatically look at guys like you and I. We're both tall.
Right.
And I'm actually big and wide. So they'll look at us differently. Like if I wear a red shirt at LAX, I'm immediately gone to secondary. That's just how it is
really?
When I go to LAX. Huh. It, without question. Yeah.
Really? Time, that's interesting.
A couple times I've worn red, like I stick out, and they'll take me to secondary, and they don't mess around. I don't know why that is. Is it because a 6'8"? Tall dude wearing red is a flag for other people that, yeah, I got through. I don't know. But I do think about those things.
I mean, do you have second thoughts now when you go cover a Cardinal game or when you're at an ASU football game? Or
you know, 'cause
I did a little bit just because the Sunday night game against the Bengals or the Monday night game against the Ravens is – it's such a big showcase. They're such
sure.
big showcase games. I mean, with the national championship, sorry, college football final, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I mean, that is – I'm not going to think twice about it, but I might when I'm driving home. I might maybe just for a couple seconds going into the stadium, and then it just will leave.
Like when you heard San Bernardino yesterday, was it just, okay, it's San Bernardino. How's the Suns going to be tonight against the Pistons?
No.
Yeah,
I mean
it's – And my wife said, well, that's what they want you to do. They want you, if these are actual – again, I don't know if these people are tied to terrorism, just based on what I've heard yesterday. And again, I'm one of those that being in the media, you kind of look at which outlet's reporting what and say, okay, I'm not trusting them to save my life. And so I'm going to wait to get all the facts in. Yeah, I mean, going to a big sporting event now, do I look around and say, well, this is a pretty easy target, but they're going after soft targets. And so if it's a Christmas party where people are there in a joyous occasion, there's 200 people, that's not 20,000 people there at a football game.
Right.
Right? So it's not like the scene from Batman where Bane walks in, the football field blows up, and you've got 60,000 people that are there. I've seen some jokes about that. There's nothing to joke about here. It's nothing to joke about. But I'm going to – I bring this up that people are going to go to events. And I think going to sporting events in general has become harder and harder. You and I are having this discussion in a 15-minute little bubble. If you're a NFL owner or you're a college football, you're a sports owner in general, you have to have these discussions now at great lengths. I would love to know what the amount of money being shelled out for security is, comparatively speaking, to paying a pitcher like David Price $217 million, which, by the way, I figured out comes down to about $100,000 a pitch.
Not bad.
And probably, what does that mean, 50 grand per warm-up pitch?
Just think about it, though, since you and I have been doing this, since the company was started.
Yeah.
Boston Marathon.
Yep.
Sandy Hook.
Yep.
Colorado theater shooting.
Yep.
San Bernardino. I mean, this is all within three.
4 years.
Yeah. Barely over 4 years. And I'm sure I'm probably missing one or
sure
two.
Sure you are. Or,
I'm just going off the top of my head. But these are becoming, I mean, these are no longer isolated incidents.
Right.
It's more of.
But you know, you get to a point of when you see this type of story that there are going to be people say, well, I'm going to just take my gun with me. Well, they have metal detectors now. Well, you can't take away my gun from me, so I'm just not going to go. And you're going to have the people that will say, well, just pray for these. And you're going to have the gun advocates that say, no, bring your gun. And you're going to have the prayer people say, well, you shouldn't bring your gun. So now you have that issue that's completely divided. Like the presidential race is going to be very, very interesting when you have conservatives that are over here saying prayer and you have this side over here saying guns and you have Hillary Clinton already today talking about gun control. And you see on social media just the division of people. What are you talking about prayer? You need guns. You don't need prayer. And then you have people say, no, you need prayer. You don't need guns. And I'm not saying that they're winning, they being whatever entity it is that's out there. But when it crawls into sports and creeps into sports, I hate to sound so straightforward about this, but there was a bombing at a sporting event last month in London that led all that.
Yep.
So you know that eventually, you can't bring 60,000 sane people together at a sporting event. It didn't happen. And there's going to be something that happens, unfortunately. I would love to think not.
Do you think people bring guns to the game and the guns get confiscated and we never hear about it? Or are people just smart enough?
I'm sure there's lots of stuff we don't hear about. You know, I have.
Because usually when you go through a line at a sporting event, I've never, ever, ever seen anyone get pulled out of line for something they brought in that they weren't allowed except for an umbrella. That's it. You walk into a game and they're like, sorry, you can't bring your umbrella. Oh.
See, and I'm at a point where I'll go to games, but I don't make it a point. Like, I don't have to be at a game anymore. I don't have to. Like, my son doesn't ask me, hey, can we go to a game? My kids who are now, three of them are in their 20s. They don't even think about wanting to go to a game. They don't. And it's not, and here I am in sports and they've seen dad do this for 30 years. It's not that big of a deal. You go to a sporting event and you don't have a great seat. And even if you have a great seat, you have people around you that you can't control, that you don't know, that act stupid. And you have restrooms that overflow and you have the beer that costs this much. And you have to pay to get in here and you have to pay to get in there. And you're just with people that, in some cases, you just don't want to be around.
And it's a huge time commitment in terms of traveling and parking and walking and standing in line. And,
right. It's not a priority for a millennial. A millennial will just take this out and say, let me go to Twitter and what's the score?
Okay. Yeah, or they could watch it on their phone.
I'm going to go back to hiking now. I'm going to go back to enjoying the outdoors. I'm going to go back to reading. That's what I see in my kids' generation. Is they don't need to be at sporting events. And this will just be another deterrent to go to a sporting event. Why do I want to go stand in line? There's 12 entrances. There's only five here. You know, and I know they're the first game of U of A because every U of A basketball game sells out. That there's going to be people complaining and being upset. And down there, the expectations for their basketball team are completely different than at Arizona State.
And like you said, half the audience that attends games
more than half
are senior citizens. Is
sure,
that safe
that's
to,
fair
say?
To say? That's right. You go to see the lower bowl to U of A basketball game,
yeah.
Or when we're in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
See, like in Vegas at Pac-12 tournament, security is really tight there.
You go through metal detectors when you go in MGM.
Yep, you go through metal
in the arena, I should say, not into the resort, but into the arena.
Into the arena, we all have to go through metal detectors.
Every single time.
But I agree with you, when I'm at an event and I just kind of get brushed through because I look like a nice guy, I don't know. I will always open my bag. It doesn't matter how many years I've seen these security people at any sporting event. You know, you've seen some of them for 20 plus years. I will immediately open my bag. Oh, that's okay, Mr. Sussman. Well, no, it's not okay. Do you need to tag me? Do you need to put a? I was at the ASU U of A game, and I got invited to one of these pregame parties. So they wristbanded me there. Then I go over to security, and they wristbanded me there. Then I went to my son's basketball game, and they wristbanded me there. So I had like this really cool rainbow collection in a span of 6 hours of where I was. It was really interesting. But it's just something to look at in sports. And yeah, I'm bothered today. I think you're bothered today.
I am.
You know,
it's disturbing. Like, I don't like to be driving around town and hear about things like this or watch CNN and hear. No one does.
No.
It's horrible.
And people are just, and I'll just say, if you want me to just do sports, no. Just like you, I see things going on in the world. There are things more important than this. This is a distraction. This is the candy store. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Television show is tonight following the Coyotes and Red Wings game on Fox Sports Arizona. We'll have four airings. I think the first one's at 9-ish. It just depends when the game ends. 9, 11, 1, tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Have a good day.